Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If the teachings and audios you find here at BethEmmanuel.org are a blessing to you, please consider supporting Beth Emmanuel with a gift, or become a member of our virtual congregation by becoming a regular contributor. To learn how to contribute, click on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
It says in the Talmud that not everyone has the merit of two tables. What does this mean? Not everyone has the merit of two tables. It means that some of us who regularly enjoy a full table in this world will not have the same privilege in the kingdom and the world to come of enjoying a full table. Some, however, will have the privilege of enjoying a bountiful table both in this world and in the kingdom, the Messianic age, and the world to come. Passover begins with a full table. It begins with a meal that we eat in memory of the past, and it concludes with a meal in anticipation of the future. The first meal of Passover looks back, and the last meal looks forward. In Hasidic thought, the pinnacle of the festival of Passover, the spiritual high of Passover, is the last day of the festival, which is the anniversary of the crossing of the Red Sea. And so some schools of Hasidic Judaism conclude the festival on the seventh day, actually on the eighth day in diaspora, where the festival is doubled. That's not our tradition here. But if we were doubling, we would do it on the eighth day to make sure that it's on the last day. But we conclude the festival with this special Seder meal, another Seder meal called a Sudat Mashiach, a meal of Messiah, or Mishte Mashiach, the banquet of Messiah. The Hasidim celebrate the meal of Messiah to focus on the coming of Messiah and to rehearse for the great Messianic banquet of the age to come. So the last meal on the last day of Passover anticipates the Messianic age to come. It's all about the kingdom of heaven, which is what the gospel is all about, the kingdom of heaven. Passover is by itself inherently a festival of freedom, festival to celebrate freedom. The Jewish people celebrate and relive their redemption from Egypt, from exile over 3,000 years ago. They celebrate this every year with the Seder meal at Passover. So too, believers in our Master celebrate the spiritual redemption that He achieved for us through His death and resurrection at Passover time. But the ultimate purpose of celebrating Passover, the ultimate reason for celebrating Passover, is to inspire us for the near and coming future, the Messianic age to come, the redemption that will take place speedily, soon, and please Hashem, in our lifetimes. The 7 days of the festival begin with the Seder. The Seder remembers the plagues on Egypt, remembers the plague of the firstborn, and there's customs and rituals that we do at the Seder, like the maror, the bitter herbs, to remember the bitterness of the Egyptian exile. And for believers and for Messianic Jews, the Passover Seder also remembers our Master's Last Supper with His disciples. So we do this in remembrance of Him as He instructed, and we rehearse His words. And at the Seder He told us, at that Last Supper, He told us that we should anticipate another Seder, a Seder of the future. When He said, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer, I tell you, I will not eat it again, I will not eat of the Passover again, until I eat it with you in my Father's kingdom, in the kingdom of heaven. So there He tells us, He prophesies that in the future, in the Messianic era, we will keep Passover together. Someday, in the future, we will recline at the table with the resurrected one. So the first night of Passover is the beginning of the season of joy. But lying ahead for us is the remembrance of the resurrection of Messiah, which took place during these 7 days, during the 7 days. And we come into this seventh day focusing on the resurrected Messiah and his speedy return. In Hebrew, the seventh day of the festival is called, is called Acharon Shel Pesach, the last of the Passover. Like the first day of the festival, the last day is also a Sabbath, as we learn in the Torah. And so that's why you're here today, obviously, because today is a Sabbath. So on the last day, the Jewish people found themselves trapped between the sea and Pharaoh, and their short-lived freedom had come to what looked like a terrible end. But, as they say, the darkest hour is just before the dawn. And so at that darkest moment, the great miracle happened. They escaped through the sea. And this is why the Torah reading for this seventh day is the story of the crossing of the sea. And we heard the song at the sea so beautifully chanted today during the Torah service. So then, as the waves were washing up on the shore, the Egyptians are washing up on the shore, which is sort of a macabre a scene. But the children of Israel rejoiced at that moment because they realized they would never again be slaves. Freedom, redemption, had finally come to fruition. So even though the entire festival is known as the festival of freedom, the time of our freedom, the Israelites did not actually obtain that freedom in actuality until the moment when God revealed his mighty power, split the sea, rescued his people, and drowned their enemies. At the sea, the sages say, the average Israelite received a level of revelation and spiritual peak that surpasses the greatest prophets, the revelation of the greatest of prophets. And the sages tell us that the common maidservant saw at the splitting of the Red Sea what Ezekiel and the prophets never saw, a revelation of God that was even higher than that of the prophets. And the Midrash says that even the unborn children in their mother's wombs danced and sang at the Red Sea. And it reminds us of the words that the Master says to his disciples. He says, many prophets and holy men have longed to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what your ears hear, but they did not hear it. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. So just as the escape from Egypt was not complete until this moment of the crossing of the Red Sea, the last day of Passover, then, is the spiritual goal of the entire festival. Unfortunately, it's not usually treated that way. Unfortunately, in most of Judaism, in most of observance, it's like the big day is the first day with the Seder, and from then on, it's just sort of 7 days of I can't eat donuts or bagels, you know? And then you just kind of wait for that to be over, but instead the spiritual intention is that each subsequent day should be higher and higher and higher as we're climbing up to this great moment of epiphany, which is the seventh day, the day of the great redemption. Just as the escape from Egypt was not complete until the crossing of the Red Sea, so too, for believers, the crossing of the Red Sea is paralleled by the great hope of the second coming of our Master. You see, there are two phases to redemption that we learn from Passover. There's an initial phase, which began the first night, and then there's an interim period, Kol HaMoed, and then there is the final redemption, the final moment of redemption. So far in this whole messianic drama that we are part of, we have seen the initial redemption in the death and resurrection of our Master. Yet we have not yet crossed the Red Sea, so to speak. We have not yet seen the final redemption when the Messiah comes and ushers in the messianic age. The Lubavitch, which is the sect of Judaism that I studied under, the Lubavitch teach that on the last day of Passover, the power of redemption is at its greatest height. And that it is possible for everyone on the last day of the festival of Passover to actually spiritually tap into the future and use it to obtain spiritual inspiration and indeed prophetic revelation about the Messiah. So on the last day of Passover, they teach that there's this tremendous spiritual revelation emanating forth that is called Or Mashiach, the light of Messiah. And we take advantage of that on the seventh day. So the Alter Rebbe, Shneur Zalman, the author of the Tanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, taught that the difference between the first day and the last day, between the first Seder and the Mashiach Seder, is like the difference between a doctor who has not yet practiced medicine and a doctor who has practiced medicine. If you're going to a doctor and you really, and he says to you, well, congratulations, you're my first patient. That might be a little disconcerting versus going to a doctor who is experienced. So when we come to the Mashiach Suda, the seventh day, and the Messiah banquet, we are now coming to the completion. What began on the first day has matured into its fruition. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe stated in one of his talks on the seventh day of Passover, he said, the ultimate Pesach forward will be realized with the coming of the Messiah. And Pesach, the word Pesach means to leap or to dance or to skip. That's what the Hebrew word means. Because Hashem passed over, he skipped over the houses with the blood on them. And so he says, the ultimate Pesach, in other words, the ultimate leap forward, will be realized with the coming of the Messiah. The world will change. And at this time, on the seventh day, we can skip forward, so to speak, and tap into that. In the 17th century, this tradition of this banquet of Messiah on the seventh day, in the 17th century, the founder of the Hasidic movement, Rabbi Israel ben Eliezer, better known as the Baal Shem Tov, or simply the Besht for short, the Baal Shem Tov instituted the custom of celebrating a seventh-day Seder, the meal of Messiah. He conducted it as an additional meal on the afternoon of the last day of Passover, paralleling the traditional meal, the third meal of the Sabbath. It was based on that. And he emphasized that the main component of this meal should be matzah. After all, it's Chag HaMatzah. It's the last day of matzah. You clear out the matzah. You eat up the rest of the matzah. So that was his. He began it with matzah. It was a matzah meal. That was the best. A few generations later, Rabbi Rashab added the custom of saying, let's drink four cups like we do on the first night. So this is back at the turn of the 19th century, really. We're talking just 100 years ago or so, where the tradition of adding four cups to this seventh-day meal was added. So this, in terms of Judaism, where most of the customs are thousands of years old, we're talking about a custom that only goes back about a century, having four cups on the seventh day of Passover. And most of Judaism doesn't do this yet, because it's a sectarian type of thing. And so why are we doing it? Well, you know, this is how I learned Judaism, was from these people myself. But it fits so perfectly into our expectation of the Messiah, who says, I will not drink of this, I will not eat of this until I do so again with you in my Father's kingdom. The connection between the last day of Passover and the coming of Messiah is explained by the Tzemach Tzedek when he says, the last day of Pesach is the conclusion of that which began on the first night of Pesach. The first night of Pesach is our festival commemorating redemption from Egypt by the Holy One. Blessed is He. It was the first redemption carried out through Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the first redeemer. It was the beginning. The last day of Pesach is our festival commemorating the final redemption, when the Holy One, blessed be He, will redeem us from the last exile through our righteous Mashiach, who is the final redeemer. The first day of Pesach is Moshe Rabbeinu's festival. The last day of Pesach is Mashiach's festival. But one is not complete without the other. The first redemption lays the groundwork for the final redemption. The sages say in the Talmud, it says, in Nisan, the month of Nisan, the month of Passover, they were redeemed. And in Nisan, they will be redeemed in the time to come. In fact, we learn from the prophet Jeremiah that the second exodus that will happen at the time of the coming of Messiah, which is called the great ingathering of exiles, that the celebration of the second exodus will be so great that it will overshadow the first. And people will no longer say, they will no longer speak of God who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, but they will speak of God who brought us up from the nations, who gathered us in from the nations. So the meal of Messiah, it's a recent innovation. It's an innovation in a religion that doesn't innovate much. It was only introduced this, like a century ago or, a few centuries ago. And most sects of Judaism aren't yet clued into it. But we are. Even though it's a recent innovation, it's a really, really old idea. We find way back in Isaiah chapter 25, verse 6, the first prophecy of the Messiah banquet, when it says, on this mountain, that's Zion, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wine, kept wine, of rich food, full of marrow, of aged wine, well-refined. Ancient Jewish legend then has been speculating about the details of this feast that Isaiah predicted for thousands of years. The sages imagine that in the future God will prepare this feast for the righteous in the Garden of Eden, and He will come and recline with them at the table. And the main course of this great feast, according to legend, will be the great beast Leviathan, the giant sea monster, and Behemoth, the giant ox, the giant ox and the giant sea monster Leviathan. There will be wine that was preserved in its grapes since the creation of the world. The Talmud says, in the future, the Holy One, blessed be He, will prepare a banquet for the righteous from the meat of Leviathan. And He will make a sukkah for the righteous out of the skin of Leviathan. And the rest of the skin will spread out on the walls of Jerusalem. And its splendor will shine from one end of the earth to the other, as it says, nations will come to your light, kings to the brightness of your rising. And it says, the Holy One, blessed be He, will make a banquet for the righteous in the Garden of Eden, and He will give them to drink from wine preserved in its grapes since the 6 days of creation. And at this banquet, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be present, along with all the righteous resurrected. And at the banquet, God will crown King Messiah in His coronation. And the Talmud says at the end of the meal, no one will be found worthy to say the grace after meals except for David, the Messiah, the son of David. Our Master also speaks of this feast many, many times throughout the Gospels. It's a recurring theme in the Gospels. He speaks of how many will come and recline at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. It's the same idea. It's the same thing. It's called the marriage supper of the Lamb. Yeshua says, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who made a great banquet and sent out invitations, and so on and so forth. There was a wedding, there were 10 virgins, they had lamps, etc. You know all these parables. This banquet is never far from his lips when he's teaching about the age to come. For the Hasidic sects that practice Meal of Messiah, the entire ritual is an attempt to spiritually reach out and to connect with the Messiah. The Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the custom, and the creator of the meal, sought to draw a physical connection between the anticipation of Messiah's coming and the last day. Here's a quote. From the last Lubavitcher Rebbe. He said, by instituting Messiah's meal, the Baal Shem Tov added a new dimension. Messiah is appreciated not only in speech and in Torah, we don't just talk about him, we don't just think about him, we don't just study about him, but he's also connected with a physical activity, assimilating him into our system, becoming part of our flesh and part of our blood. Moreover, the food from Messiah's banquet becomes part of our flesh and blood, and our faith in and yearning for Messiah permeates not just the soul's faculties, but also the physical body. These are words that sound very much like our Master's instructions at his last Seder when he said, take this bread, eat it, it's my body. Take this cup, drink it, it's my blood. Chassidim teach that when we eat matzah at Passover, we are eating godliness because it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to eat the matzah. We're eating godliness. I recommend whole wheat godliness. It makes a big difference. Some Hasidic sources say that participation in the meal of Messiah causes a person to carry the light of Messiah throughout the rest of the year, in his interactions and his actions throughout the rest of the year. The soul connection that he makes carries him forward. So, according to tradition, like I mentioned, the great main course of the meal is Leviathan. Now, I didn't put this all together when I first started keeping Meal of Messiah. I was never invited to one of these, I asked one of my friends, I said, what do you eat at the Meal of Messiah? What do you eat? And he said, well, matzah and eggs. Eggs? Easter eggs? I don't know. So in my own family, we started this tradition years and years ago, what must seem like decades ago now. But we started to eat fish. Why? Because fish have an eating fish, there's a discipleship connection to fish. The Master took the fish, he broke the fish, and he used the fish and the loaves, and he fed the multitude, and he said, I'll make you fishers of men, and he told them, throw your net on the other side, and there's the miraculous catch of fish. And when he was resurrected, he stood in the midst of the 11 and he said, can't you see that I'm real? A ghost doesn't have flesh and blood and bone. Do you have anything here to eat? And they gave him a piece of fish. And he ate this piece of fish. Well, the thing is, I didn't like fish. I just never ate fish, couldn't eat fish. Fish, oh, you know, the smell of it. But I decided, this is an act of discipleship. And so, in our house, we started to make fish. And, you know, after these many years, I really like fish. It's good. It's very good. So we started to eat fish. And fish has been part of our version of the Meal of Messiah for all these years. When we were putting the Haggadah for Meal of Messiah together last year, was the first time that I ever made the connection between the fish that we are eating on the seventh day and the fish that we're supposed to eat at the banquet in the future. Because Leviathan is a big fish. He's fish. The Leviathan is actually parv. That's right. You can eat the Leviathan with dairy. Anyway, in Breslav tradition, this is a strange one. Breslav Chassidim have the tradition that one of the Messiah's names is Dag. That is, you know, Dalet Gimel, fish. He is the fish. I make you fishers of men. I want to read to you just a short passage from Chabad teaching about the seventh day and the meal of Messiah, and then we'll conclude and we'll soon be going downstairs to eat the meal ourselves. But here's a short passage for meditation during the meal of Messiah. We each have our own challenges. For some of us, it is keeping Sabbath. For others, it is giving charity. For some, it is learning or taking time to learn. For others, it is being patient and understanding. If challenged, we might just answer, well, this is how I am. This is me. I can't change. But the truth is that these are challenges we all have to face eventually. We have to break out of these personal exiles and these personal limitations. And we can harness the essence of Pesach and redemption to propel our lives to a level we could not usually reach on our own. The last hours of Passover are when this energy is strongest. It's when we are most inspired. We have fulfilled all the customs of the 6 days of Passover, and now we have drunk the 4 cups of wine, we've eaten the matzah, we have listened, we have sung, we have resolved, we have become uplifted. And at the very last few moments, as we all close our eyes, singing and dancing together, this is the moment when we will feel that Mashiach is actually here. When we can believe that if we would only open our eyes, we would see him right there, dancing with us. Chag Sameach.